Thank you. My name is Joel Barbahan. I'm sure you can butcher the last name a lot better. I didn't mean to do it. When you're named after a doll and a chicken, it's you get to be kind of callous as a child. But thank you guys for having me. It's always a pleasure to go on an AA road trip, especially go somewhere where there's a big group of infectiously happy people like you looking back at me and wearing ties and all dressed up. I should have put on a suit or something tonight. But I'm here because Jim was kind enough to drive all the way down to Baltimore a couple months ago, and he gave a great talk at our home group. And I got to talking to him, and he asked me if I wanted to come up. So thank you to Jim. And I like that you guys have this, they call this the sponsorship group and seem to make that like an active part of the meeting, to continue with that message. That's great. I just so happen to be, I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I am the sponsor, and the sponsor guys are the sponsor guys. And so so that puts me right in the middle of this thing. What I'll try to do for the next, 40 minutes is talk about basically two things. Whenever I talk, whether it's for 2 minutes or for, as long as someone will let me talk on a car ride or something like that, or if they're stranded in my house, I try to talk at the same time, or at least in the same sitting, about what it's like or what my experience is like suffering from alcoholism and what my experience is like recovering from alcoholism. I think if I just do the former, then it's kind of cruel. I just stir around the mess. If I just do the second thing, then nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about, and we kind of have to qualify ourselves. I'm really going to be helpful to somebody who's still in that place where they are suffering and they can't see past their own nose and have absolutely no idea how to get out of it. The way I see it, alcoholism, I think it can be defined in a lot of different ways, but I think a lot of the stuff that I will try to talk about tonight can be put into a lot of different words. I like to listen to a lot of speaker CDs and hear people from different parts of the country and different approaches. And I hear a lot of times something that I really, really like is hearing people talk using very different words to describe things, but to describe the exact same thing using different words. And the way that I describe alcoholism, the way I think about it, is that it's two pieces. There's the spiritual malady, and then there's just this obsessive, freak out, this weird thing that I get where I just can't stop doing something, like drink. Specifically. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think I had both of those symptoms all of my life. It just happened. My sister was in town this weekend from Kentucky, and I spent a lot of yesterday and some of Friday night with my parents, and we were looking through photo albums last night, and a lot of pictures of me as a child, and although I forget them, I actually had some really great times as a little kid. I have no memories of hating myself and hating life and all the things that I define myself as, as an alcoholic, as a real little kid. But for whatever reason, when I turned, I got to be like 7, 8, I wasn't going to say 15, 16, no. It was like when I was going to be 7, 8, certainly well before I hit 10, I think I exhibited the things that I think of as being an alcoholic. I had this emptiness. I had an emptiness that I have had all of my life from that point on. Whenever I'm not either drunk or caught up in some really exciting worldly moment, or doing this spiritual AA deal. The best way I can describe it is just to put it in my own words, which is just feeling uncomfortable. Not being comfortable in the here and now. Waking up, becoming aware first thing in the morning that I am me yet again for another day, that my circumstances haven't drastically changed, my parents are still my parents, the things I have are still the things I have, the friends I have, the school I go to, all the stuff that is me is still me, and being very, very disappointed with that. looking around and thinking if my parents drove a better car, if I had cooler shoes, if, whatever body part of the moment was looked a little bit different or performed a different way, if only someone would love me. If only anything, and I liken it to like being a little kid. Like it was, when I was in school, I hated school and couldn't wait for school to end. And then I'd get out of school for the day, and I'd go, oh, God, I can't wait for the weekend. This sucks. The weekend's going to be great. And then it's the weekend, and, oh, this sucks. I can't wait for the summer break. And, just as a metaphor for, like, all of my life, just always not being comfortable in the here and now. And somehow my mind, like, that's sort of my natural state, the uncomfortable in the here and now. And, like, what follows behind that immediately for me is thinking that if this was different, then I'd feel okay. Or if that was different, then I'd feel okay. A thing that I've done before I found a drink, while I was drinking and well into sobriety. And by the way, one of the things I really want to focus on tonight is something we were talking about on the way up here, the difference between sobriety and recovery, because I've had both, or at least I think I've had both. I know I've had sobriety, and I'm very convinced I've had recovery as well, but the difference between those has been really, really, really profound in my experience. By the way, I've been sober since June 6th of 95. I've not been active and happy and excited about AA and willing to drive to different city or even having any idea why anyone would drive to a different city for AA for some of that time. Back to this point about having the spiritual malady well before I picked up a drink. I just did. Just not being comfortable here now. And I think I also had the obsessive thing well before I picked up a drink. I remember as a little kid, I would like stuff, but I wouldn't just like it. I would become completely, like, disgustingly obsessed with it. One of many examples is that I liked boats as a kid. I fantasized about someday I would have a boat, and I'd have this boat and that boat, and what kind of boat would I get if I win $1 million, and looking at the boat magazines and dreaming about being on that boat in that cove and how cool it would be, and like daydreaming about that and focusing on that and lying in bed for like 5 hours before I could go to sleep thinking about that, and like to the point where literally before picking up a drink I literally would have the experience of like punching myself in the head to try to make the stop make the thought stop, because I was. That obsessive compulsive kind of thing that I have was present before I found the drink. That inability to stop it. And again, before I found the drink, I looked for distractions for those things. And I was the good old days of childhood, like when I was 10 or so, I loved to start fires and like run around in the woods, like someone mentioned Roman candles before the meeting. That brings back a lot of memories. Get four dumb 12-year-old kids and just everybody light a Roman candle and run around and try to shoot each other in the butt. I actually, if anyone has that, I do that at the park lot after the meeting, frankly. That's fun. That's still fun. the list goes on, like the petty vandalism, the excitement. We're all going to sneak out from our parents' house and meet up in the field, and somebody's going to bring something and whatever. We'll find some kind of excitement. Trick a friend into doing something awful and embarrassing, or just beat up a friend for no apparent reason. as apparently funny as some of this stuff is, it provided me some kind of relief. I like to think about the wick. Like when I the moment or the seconds or whatever when I light a wick, I'm comfortable in the here and now. Like I want to be right here right now with you guys. I want to see what's going to happen. Is it going to blow up? Is it going to vaporize the stuff that we put on the log next to the bomb that we made? Like is it going to be like how loud is it going to be? Is there going to be a crater? Are the police going to come? Like whatever the thing was, if it was really exciting, then I was comfortable being me right there. But I had to have something that was really exciting. I had to. I just being me, doing whatever it was that I was assigned to do or whatever it was that was reasonable and responsible to do at the moment, in any moment, was not comfortable. And when I found the drink, I found this magic tool that made me comfortable in the here and now. And at first it was exciting for all the reasons that, all the other dumb kid stuff I did was exciting because I wasn't allowed to do it. It wasn't recommended. It was, you know, there was all sorts of risks, and like the, you know, the other 12-year-olds weren't getting drunk and like, you know, skipping, you know, home ec class to drink and, you know, smoke weed or whatever. And, you know, so I felt cool, and but had all these other social sort of things that, you know, that were added to it in the beginning that made me think it was cool. But within probably 6 months, it became really clear to me that it was providing me some kind of relief, and that I didn't need the buddies to be there. Like, I didn't need to be, you know, to the extent that I ever was a good kid or a good student or a good son or brother or an honest friend, you know, or had goals or hopes or any of that stuff. I didn't need any of that for the drink to work. You know, that relief would just come. It would come every time as long as I could get that alcohol in me. And I absolutely love that. I absolutely loved it. And I can't even, I don't think I could overestimate to you how much I consciously believed that I had discovered the answer to all of life's problems when I found, you know, the drink and all the other substances that I later found. And by later, I mean like within a month. I just absolutely love that relief. You know, I would sleep with beer bottles and read them, and you know, I had like the Budweiser, the fancy calligraphy writing on it and all that stuff. And I mean, and I really developed this sick relationship. I mean, it was really I was just a sick kid that found this kind of this relief from his struggles in a bottle, you know. I just loved it. You know, and from the moment that I found the drink, pretty much everything kind of dissolved away. Like, you know, I discovered that I didn't need to be any of those other things in life for the drink to work. And I stopped focusing on them. You know, and all my kid focus on different activities, whatever they were, that was sort of dispersed. You know, the obsession of the moment, the multiple, you know, I love this and I also love that and I love that and I'm going to try to be obsessed with all of it. It all became focused, you know, within a year, certainly within 2 years, certainly by the time I was 14 years old, on a daily basis, I was waking up with perfect focus on what I was about and what I wanted in life, and that was the next drink. There was a brief period for, you know, a couple of years, whatever, where it was fun. You know, there wasn't a lot of prices to be paid. I wasn't like waking up in emergency rooms. I wasn't, you know, having the variety of creative punishments that my parents inflicted on me. You know, all, you know, productive. You know, I'm not talking about various beatings or anything like that. You know, those poor people. you know, there was a period where it was just fun. Where there was a period where it was all about, you know, let's meet at the field and we'll try something new. And like, you know, every once in a while, like a girl would show up, you know, like maybe three times total, you know, but then it transitioned really quickly into just, you know, just me finding relief and it being not, you know, no pretenses. You know, it was about a couple of friends doing drug deals or doing what they had to do, you know, robbing from each other, you know, breaking into houses, stealing from parents, you know, doing whatever it took to just get the next relief, which was no longer fun and exciting. It was just baseline. It was just, I need my medication. You know, I needed, on a daily basis, I would wake up and I would want the relief. And towards the end, you know, the last, I'd say at least 2 years of my active drinking, you know, just to kind of fast forward a little bit, it was about a daily basis, waking up with no friends, and you know, that emptiness that had been there previously, waking up sober with nothing really exciting going on, became really, really, really just awful. You know, the contrast between finding the relief from the drink and then going back to being sober, having to wake up sober every day was like this curse, you know, and my life became this battle against sobriety. You know, and I viewed the world as a dark, empty place that offered me nothing. I saw no value in friendships. You know, I had two parents that have always loved me every single minute of my life. I have a sister who's also loved me every single minute of her life and my life. And I've, frankly, I have been given every opportunity that a human being on this earth could ever want. You know, most people that are born on this earth would give their, literally would probably give their left arm to be born a white, middle-class American with two loving parents, with education opportunities and health care, and, you know, and everything that a human being could possibly need on this earth. And but for me, because I had this alcoholism, that felt like an empty, torturous prison, you know, that I was locked in. And only because I have this crazy thing. And if you're sitting here and you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, you know what I mean, that, you know, good for you, you know? Although the crazy thing is that the way this thing all works out, I'm perfectly happy that all that happened. I'm perfectly happy that every little bit of terrible, awful, suicide, you know, inspiring misery I've ever felt, I'm grateful for all of it. Because the bottom line is the last few years of my life have been so awesome and so much fun, and there's so much hope and beauty in my life, and the future holds just limitless fun and coolness that every little bit of all that pain is just fine with me. You know what I mean? And the wonderful thing is that I can, you know, having the memory of those experiences and having those experiences with that enormous tweak that my sponsor sort of showed me about how to use those experiences to help others, it just shifts the whole world, it turns it right on its head, you know what I mean? But I'll get into that in a minute. So anyway, that place, that dark, awful, terrible, painful place with no friends, you know what I mean, with no one that I could confide in, you know, or at least no one that I did confide in, that I was comfortable confiding in. There were plenty of people. There were the police, there was the social workers, the therapists, the psychiatrists, the parents, the teachers, the principal, pretty much every kind of professional that a mom could get involved to help their child was involved at some point in my childhood. And again, without getting into this, I mean, I was one of the early ADD kids with the Ritalin and the ink blots and like the tests, the What's Wrong with My Child books by the bedside, all of that goes way back, you know, coincidentally from the time I was about seven. But anyway, that empty, awful place, the only relief I knew was the drink, you know. And you know, my you know, grand sponsor, who many of you know, he was the first person that I heard, you know, say that he was not a problem drinker, he was an answer drinker. And that just sat right with me. You know, when I heard that, I was actually, I'd been to rehab and then to therapy and to, you know, other fellowship for years, and as well, and different sort of meetings with a different focus of this fellowship for years. And I never heard that. You know, somehow at that point in my life, the belief that I had was that the drink somehow was the root of the problem. And everything was focused on getting away from the next drink. And somehow in the absence of the drink, I would find recovery. But the way I see it now, you know, is that the problem is alcoholism. That the drink was the first solution, the first effective, reliable, long-lasting, consistent solution that I found to alcoholism, you know. The only, you know, maybe not the only problem, but probably the biggest problem is that it just comes with a whole enormous set of problems, you know, that I've been describing, which are the things that I willingly traded in for that drink, you know, the physical health, all the risks, all the damage that we all know about, you know, the things that we do that the drink causes, the destroyed relationships, you know, the destroyed hope, all of that stuff, you know. And at this time in my life, many times I would get to sit down from, you know, all those professionals as well as people that loved me. The people, you know, mostly people that were related to me that were close and that wanted to be close and wanted to find out what was wrong and wanted so much to help me and to find some answer. They would sit, you know, I'd be caught with something, or I'd be in the hospital bed, and then, you know, I'd be in some situation where it was clear that there's a big problem. You know, it was clear, like the dog knew that there was a problem. It was painfully obvious to anybody that there's an enormous problem here, and let's sit down and talk to Joel, and we'll try to reason with him and try to figure out an answer here, you know. And they would, you know, and they would say the things that people say to us: why are you doing this to yourself? Why are you doing this? You know, I was fortunate enough to have so many loving people that they rarely focused on why are you doing this to me, But I was, you know, the way I look back, I can see what I was doing to them. But they were so loving usually that they would focus on, Joel, why are you doing this to you? And why are you throwing away your body and your hopes and your dreams and your you know, your future, and why are you doing all this mess, you know? And at the time I didn't think about it this way. I didn't really see it this way, but it was absolutely the truth that it was worth it. It was absolutely worth it. That was the bottom line. I never had the balls to just respond to somebody and be like, I do it because I feel enormous relief. It's the only thing that holds any value to me in this world is that relief. That's why I did it. You know what I mean? And, and to the alcoholic, that makes sense, you know? And I think it makes sense to a point where either we die, we just keep doing it until we die, or we get this relief from the obsession, from that cycle of getting drunk, feeling relief, sobering up, hating it, getting drunk again, feeling relief, sobering up and hating it. That obsessive thing that happens where we're powerless over the next drink, powerless. You know, at a certain point, I think most of us probably, or at least, I should just shut the hell up and try to speak for anybody. For me, I got to a point where even when I wanted to, I couldn't stop. And I think that just from my views and, you know, looking at what the guys that I drank with, what they did in the few years after I stopped and they didn't, you know, and now working with people and you know, all the stuff that we do, getting around AA, hearing stories, it seems that what happens is either we just continue that until we die a miserable death. Sometimes we're young, sometimes we're old, or this thing happens, this, you know, this, call it a miracle, call it whatever, you know, this unmistakable, you know, I think this God thing that I can't put into words and I can't describe, but something happens where we get a window, you know, we get relief, you know, and in my experience, it happened at a time where, yeah, it was another trip to the emergency room. It was a particularly low point. You know, was it the lowest point in my, you know, was it a bottom? You know, as if it's like some kind of stock thing, like, hey, we hit bottom, hopefully that's the bottom because it's going to rise up from there, you know. I think it just happens. I don't think it's nearly as logical as that. You know, I know so many people who have had this moment happen to them when things really aren't that bad, where they had much worse experiences before. But anyway, the bottom line is that I had this window where I just didn't want to drink anymore. I was willing to do whatever. You know, I mean, I was at this point where I'm like, you know, kind of spinning all the plates, you know, the lies to cover up the lies, the answer to every one of life's problems is, you know, a case of beer, a couple episodes of The Simpsons, and about 20 hours in bed. You know, like that. That was like, if I just give me that happy place, and then we'll deal with all this in about 20 hours. And then, of course, the next day, that's the answer again. But and you know, what happened to me in that experience was that I became absolutely willing. I went to a detox facility. It wasn't my first time being locked up somewhere, you know, to try to get off of the drink, but I went there. I was there for like 6 days, and I came out and I went to 12-step meetings. It wasn't this fellowship, but it was a different, very similar fellowship, and I went there, and I was willing, and I was desperate, and what I found was loving, helpful people that freely gave me everything that they had to offer. I was literally friendless. You know, I was living in my parents' house, and I literally stopped answering the phone like a year and a half earlier because it was just never for me, for good reason, because I had no ability to be a friend at all. And they gave me freely everything that they had to offer. You know, I think that's the bottom line. Is, you know, I've been sober about 12 years, and I've done AA. I've done this thing in a lot of different ways. And I could easily talk for the next hour and a half just on the different ways that I did AA and the Hazelton guides and the relapse prevention stuff and the long written out first steps, the year sober before I did a fourth step, the different sponsors, the different reasons that I was attracted to these different men, you know, the different things that they had, the different things that they taught me. But I think the bottom line is, you know, and I said I wanted to talk about the difference between sobriety and recovery. The way I see it today was that when I first came around here, I saw that next drink as this terrifying thing. I saw it like a freight train coming down the tracks. and I didn't want it to hit me. I did not, you know, I was well aware at that point in my life of the damage that I was doing as a result of my drinking. I was well aware of all those negative consequences from the drink. But I wasn't aware of the spiritual nature of my disease. I wasn't aware of that other part of my disease. And my recovery and all my actions in AA were motivated by just staying away from that next drink. You know, like the saying, just, you know, one day at a time. You know, I took that really literally. I found a whole bunch of people who encouraged me to think that if I could just stay sober, you know, 1 hour at a time, 1 minute at a time, 1 day at a time, 1 week at a time, 1 year at a time, that somehow recovery would amass, and that I would get somewhere, and that I would grow, and that if I went to a lot of meetings and listened to what they had to say, that I would recover, you know, and better yet, you know, get a home group and join and become involved with the fellowship, and go out and have coffee with them, and be a coffee maker and do these things, which are, of course, are wonderful things that I'm involved in today. But what was really missing was God-centered service to others recovery. I was running my own life with my own ideas. Because what was happening is while you know, a lot of AA meetings and a lot of focus on staying away from the next drink was really effective at staying sober. I stayed sober. You know, after a while, the desire to drink went away. You know, I focused a lot on, you know, I learned how to be a decent friend. You know, I learned how to, like, function as a normal sort of human being. I went from being a, you know, borderline, like, high school dropout who'd never learned how to use a comma, you know, cheated my way through middle school and high school. And, you know, I went from that to, like, the different colleges, to graduate school, and then, you know, and then doing well in graduate school. And then, So on the outside, a lot of stuff, you know, that just staying sober and then seeking worldly things was really helpful in a lot of ways. But the but is that that spiritual malady for me was not being treated. You know, I still always try to talk about this, you know, what my experience was like being sober but without having that spiritual malady treated, was that I still woke up feeling empty. You know, and I know a lot of people who say that, you know, blank years sober, they were more miserable than any time in their life. That's not my experience. For me, the lowest, darkest, most awful place in my life was when I was new. You know, when I was friendless, and just that dark place that I described, where the drink was the only answer. But despite the fact that it wasn't the most awful and lonely, terrible, depressing place in my life, there was still a lot of pain. You know, there were still many, many nights where I would lie in bed for 1, 2, 5, 6 hours just lying there feeling like I'm, you know, in the middle of the universe in this empty wasteland, just spinning out of control with no purpose and no meaning, and just feeling this indescribable hole in myself that was not being treated. And like I did earlier in my life, I continued to respond to that immediately by looking at the people around me who looked comfortable. You know, I would see you and I think, well, you don't look like you feel the way I do. You look like you slept well last night. You know, why is that? Could it be that you're driving a fancy car and have nice clothes? Maybe that's it. It could be that you have a nice job, or that you have a pretty girlfriend, or that your guns are 2 inches bigger than mine. That's got to be it. that was the answer for a few years. But, you know, and what happened was I would come to AA to stay sober, and I would, you know, come to drive to AA talking and thinking about things other than AA, sit in a meeting, you know, afraid to get called on. If I did, I would say something, yeah, thanks, I'm grateful to be sober, something humble, I don't know anything, love you guys, appreciate it, you know, hey, Joe, you want to say something? And then I would leave, you know, instantly the meeting would break, and all right, where are we, you know, what's going on, you know? Having nothing to do with AA, and I desperately sought things. You know, for me it was sports, girls, and then ultimately like the career goal. You know, the next degree, the next dollar. And today I lump all of those things together, and frankly I think that they are the same as the drink, except for the drink I get the added benefit of the freako compulsive thing. And I view all of those things today as worldly things that, when I seek them as an answer to a spiritual malady, they're just not that successful. You know, when they glimmer and they look attractive, it's really motivating. And I've learned that if I work hard, I can be focused and I can attain those things sometimes. But I also learned that the relief that comes from attaining those things is short-lived and it's incomplete. And what happened was when I was in that state, a group that was in Baltimore that still exists, that's similar to yours, they dress a little different. They travel in packs. They smile. They laugh. They take AA seriously. They sponsor people. They're interested in the history. They're interested in ways to be. They sit around and talk about how they can be effective in passing on a message. And these people came to my home groups, and they came to our meetings with their message and called on their friends, and I was appalled by this. This was insulting. This was arrogant. This reminded me of Children of the Corn, which I still think about. And the Children of the Corn, maybe. Well, that's 10 minutes. Okay, I went there. I went there. I was open-minded. You know, let's go see. Let's go find out. You know, I went there, and I'll give the short story of what happened. The initial experience. The short story is that I was exposed to something that I'd never been exposed to before. I was exposed to people that had genuine spiritual awakenings, and that understood. What not how it worked, but what they'd done, and they were willing and motivated to pass that on to other people. You know, I came into contact with people. You know, at this point, I'm 9 years sober, or almost 9 years sober. I'm basically 9 years sober, and I'm meeting people that are 6 months sober, or a year and a half sober, or 3 years sober, that have big books and have read them recently, and they're talking about things. They know what's in the big book. They're using it in their lives, you know, and they're working with other people. They're sponsoring people. They're saying in open meetings, in unqualified terms, that I'm available for sponsorship. I will help you. Oh my God, that's just arrogant to think that you would have anything to offer. That's what I thought. It was just so arrogant to get up here and say that you had something to offer, you know. And today, what I know that is, or at least in my experience, I have absolute, complete confidence that I have something to offer. What that is God. It's not me. I have absolute confidence. That something happened in my life. That some I have no idea what it is. I can't define God. I can't tell you why it happened or when. I can't even tell you when it happened. I can tell you what week it happened, but I can't tell you when it happened. But what I can tell you is that it did happen to me, and I can tell you what I did, and I can show you what I did to have that happen to you. You know what I mean? Because I've seen so many people show the same. The secret behind all this is so damn simple. You know what I mean? It's really, really simple. You know what I mean? Basically, you find a relationship, or what I did was I found this relationship with God that's based on being of service. It's like all the stuff that I was doing for recovery, instead of doing all that so that I can stay sober, so that I can get toys and get trophies and have friendships and, like, you know, then that life can be great and beautiful for me. Instead of that being the motivation is so that I can be helpful. You know, it's a very, very different focus. You know, and my sponsor shared that with me the very first night we sat down and we talked. And he talked to me about these things being spiritual principles. You know, he told me in a loving and gentle but clear way that he wasn't interested in a relationship. He wasn't interested in, you know, sitting over coffee for 3 hours and sharing each other's stories and, you know, relating about work and relating about humor. And, you know, sharing in our struggles and our suffering together. What he was interested in is clearly and directly showing me and explaining to me what he did and what happened in his life and passing that on to me. And he said, if you're interested in that, then it's my job and pleasure to go to any lengths to make that happen. You know, and he said those things, having driven an hour and a half to go pick me up to sit on a park bench and talk to me about this stuff and then take me to a meeting and then drive me home and then drive an hour and a half back to his house, you know. And you know, just the whole idea that my self-centered fear, that my focus on my problems is the problem, not the answer, was enormous to me. You know, the whole idea that if I shift, instead of the focus being inward, like how can I be a better boyfriend? How can I do this? How can I do that? How can I stay away from the drink? You know, how can I map out my life and map out my career and map out my relationships and map out my day and all that self-centered focus? Like, instead of that being the answer, you know, because, like, as an alcoholic, when everything starts to slip away, when the girl slips away, when the drink, you know, when the drinking gets out of control, what I do is I start to control it. You know, like, okay, I'm going to set rules. So that's the thing, like the self-imposed rules, you know what I mean? I'm only going to drink this much. You know, this 12-pack that's 12 for Friday, that's 12 for Saturday. Inevitably, every single time, it's like it's 18 Friday and then 6 Saturday morning before I get out of bed. You know? And 9 years sober, living my own life without this solid sponsorship, without this relationship with God, it's the same thing. It's like I'm going to set this rule, you know, with my relationships, with all this stuff. I'm going to focus inward on my problems, and I'm going to just address and just, you know, try to pull apart my problems to figure it out. And then somehow I'm going to grow from that was not so effective. But what he showed me was this simple God-centered thing where I see self-centeredness as the problem. And as an answer for that, a relationship with God that's based on service to others. You know, that I don't understand. I don't profess or in my own mind or to you to have any idea what God is. You know, I think that God is everything. I think that God is basically the sum total of everything around me, everything that I can perceive, and even all sorts of things that I don't have the ability to perceive. God is everything and all of that. And it's my job to serve that by helping you. You know, and I had a good friend a couple of months ago. He came over. It's probably a guy that's come and spoken here. He's one of my favorite speakers in AA. He has a real gift for putting this thing into words. And we were talking about what is God's will. You know, it was me and another guy that I sponsor, that I live with, and we're talking about, you know, how do you know when it's God's will? You know, how do you know, you know, is this in this situation? Am I really, you know, what's God's will? It's, you know, a lot of facts come up in our lives, and sometimes it's not always clear. And this guy started to talk about, he said, you know, God's will is love. You know, what would love have you do in this situation? And that just sat right with me, and I hope I don't forget that. I think that in any situation, if there's a loving thing to do, I think that is God's will. It's not always fun. It's not always easy. You know, again, we're on the way up here. We're talking about, you know, every once in a while you work with a guy, and you know, he's one of these people that for whatever reason it's somebody that walks through life getting yeses and getting shooed away. You know, sometimes you meet people that are so they're violent, or that they have a particularly ugly personality, and that, you know, often those are the people that suffer the most. You know, you meet them, they're blowhards and they're full of themselves and they sound like they've got it all together, but they're just disgusting people. And 99.9% of the people that interact with them are like, oh yeah, sure, yeah. Oh yeah, that horrible idea is a great idea. Yeah, do that. Tell you what, it's lunchtime. I gotta go. You know, just anything to shut them up. You know, but the loving thing when we have somebody like that is to sit them down, even when you think that this person may literally hurt me. You know, this person is in my car. It's nighttime. There's nobody around. We're talking. They've just told me what he plans to do with his ex-wife, and I can either agree with him and ask him to leave. Or I can be like, you know what, my friend, I think you might be missing something. You know, I think that you may not be able to see it, and I may be wrong, but I think that you're an alcoholic and that your ideas, and that this idea in particular is not a good one. You know? Sometimes it's difficult for other reasons. Sometimes people are just so beautiful that people just will say anything, you know, either be terrified that they're talking to me, oh my God, she's talking to me, or just willing to say anything because, you know, you hope that, you know, maybe one thing will lead to the next, you know? In situations like that, you know, sometimes an attractive young lady in AA, that the right answer is, you know what, why don't you go talk to her about that, goodbye, you know what I mean? Sometimes that's the loving thing to do, you know what I mean? And I don't know why the hell I got off on a tangent, but what happened to me, and I'll close the last couple of minutes, is that I found this different way of life about 3.5 years ago. It was in September. Was that 03, 04? 04. I'm looking at you like you even know. Yeah. I met you 4 months ago. In September of 2004, this thing happened where, because of sponsorship, you know, I met this guy, and my life, the facts, the things around me, like all those gifts that have always been in my life, it didn't really change, and the trajectory of my outside life didn't change a whole lot, but my perspective changed entirely. And problems that I never paid any attention to disappeared. You know, I did the steps in about like 2.5 weeks. Not that time matters. And you can do it in less time than that and in more time than that. But I did them directly. You know, I had a sponsor who was available to give me direction just as quickly as I would do the suggested thing. You know, I'd visit with him and he would say, blah, 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 I suggest you do that. Call me when you're done. I would do that and call him and he would say, blah, 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 I suggest you do that. And then, you know, next thing you know, I'd had the spiritual awakening. You know, I mean, I had this thing happen. I don't know why, or you know, like I said, or how it worked, but it changed everything about my life. And every single day since then has been entirely different. Every single day hasn't been absolutely wonderful, but I guarantee you I've not had a bad day since then. And it's a matter of perspective. You know, old family feuds and old problems and old things that I thought that I had suffered from all my life, all of a sudden I realized that I wasn't suffering from them. Like that thing that granddad did to aunt whatever 40 years ago, like whatever, granddad's an imperfect guy. You know what I mean? He's just another one of God's kids doing his best. How can I help? All of a sudden I don't hate people. You know what I mean? Just this beautiful thing happened. And the only way that I found to keep perpetuating that freedom is to pass it on to other people and to seek ways to be more effective at passing it on to other people. And also, as a result, as an equally motivating result, is that it's a tremendous amount of fun. You know, it's also like a sense of duty and loyalty to kind of give back what was so freely given to me. And as it stands today, I just have this wonderful life. And AA is a big, fun, good time part of it. And as you know, that's it. I think I'm completely out of time. And thank you guys very much for having me.
All right, I hope we brought you a typical AA meeting, and with that, we have a nice way of closing.
But deliver us from evil. Divine is the kingdom, the power,